This year, history and music conspire to bring us two big birthdays of artists whose music didn't just entertain, it helped make history. Richard Wagner was born May 22, 1813, in Leipzig, Germany, just a few months before a multinational coalition drove Napoleon back to France in the Battle of Leipzig. On October 10th of that same year, Giuseppe Verdi was born in a village in the Parma region of the Kingdom of Italy. Our favorite authority on classical music, Fred Plotkin, joins us right now on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us how Wagner and Verdi became such important figures in the development of classical music and opera. They also helped to shape the national identities of 19th century Italy and Germany. And we'll also look at some of the venues where you can celebrate these musical legends this year.
Well, it's remarkable that the two titans of opera, Verdi and Wagner, were born only 5 months apart in the same year in 1813. They led parallel lives and will be celebrating them both throughout the year, both in Europe and North America and the whole world.
And what's interesting for me, Fred, is that their careers are sort of emblematic of what romanticism and nationalism and all that excitement going on in the late 19th century in Europe was all about. What's your take on romanticism and nationalism and how the art and the music intersect with the struggles for freedom and national independence?
What we forget about 19th century Europe is that while England and France were nations and Austria was a big nation and empire, Germany and Italy were not yet countries. They were a confederation of little republics, of lands, as they were called in Germany, and they were really trying to find their identity. Their identities were described to them in the music of Wagner in Germany and the music of Verdi in Italy. Verdi went so far as to write operas that promoted rebellion, especially Nabucco in 1842, that called for the Italian peoples to throw out foreign occupiers, namely Austria and France.
So if Verdi was actually calling for insurrection, that would have been pretty dangerous in its day, wouldn't it?
Was actually treasonable.
Yeah.
And Verdi often had to leave the country, or I should say the peninsula of Italy. He spent a fair amount of time in France. And in addition, Wagner had to escape Germany in 1849. He was part of the insurrection in Dresden in May of 1849. There was a warrant for his arrest, and he got out of the country and went to Switzerland, to Zurich, where he spent 11 years in exile from Germany.
Now, this is really an amazing thought that the two greatest opera composers, primarily, they were not revolutionaries or statesmen or politicians, they were composers, yet they were both really tied up with their revolutionary struggles as German-speaking people tried to weld together modern Germany, which happened around 1870, and all the Italian-speaking people had that notion that we Italian-speaking people should have one country. And again, that didn't come until 1870 either, and both of them would have been, 57 years old when their countries were finally united.
Yes, but I think it's fair to say that Wagner at least was a revolutionary. We think of him now through the prism of Nazism. He died 50 years before Hitler came to power. He was very left-wing. He was rather unconventional. He was a socialist in some ways. He was a vegetarian. He was a Buddhist for a long time. His thinking was very unconventional, and it's very hard to pigeonhole Wagner. Similarly with Verdi, who to me is the greater man, was a man of such principle and such strength that he was willing to stare down censors, to be an atheist or at least an agnostic in the religious environment of Italy. He did battle with the Vatican all the time about presumed morality, things that we talk about today and are still confrontational today. He was after in the 1840s and 50s. So they both were revolutionaries who happened to be two of the greatest composers of all time.
I love this notion, or I'm just stirred and inspired by this notion that in the 1860s, when artists and intellectuals and philosophers were just so enthusiastic about putting together a united Italy, you couldn't even wave the Italian colors, you know, and people had these secret ways to show their patriotism. And I just am so inspired by this notion that at an opera in Italy, when the Verdi aria would be playing, people would stand on their seats and sing it together as if singing their national anthem. And even the name Verdi was like a national slogan, wasn't it?
Well, in fact, when Italians would cry Viva Verdi in that time, the king, because they wanted to form a constitutional monarchy under the royal family in Turin, was Vittorio Emanuele, V-E. And he would have been Vittorio Emanuele Re d'Italia, V-E-R-D-I, Victor Emmanuel, King of Italy. So in shouting Viva Verdi, what the Italians were also saying was, long live the constitutional monarchy that we're trying to create. Verdi, with Nabucco in 1842, wrote what is the unofficial national anthem of Italy, Va Pensiero, also known as the Chorus of the Hebrew Slaves, in which they sang of their dreams of freedom. This was a scene from the Bible, but the Italians came to understand that they were just like the Jews. And I, as a Jewish New Yorker who loves Italy, came to realize that the Italians are really just Jews who eat prosciutto.
Well, and they had their codes, just like Jews did throughout the ages to survive. And when you think that the big dynasties or the big powers of the time, what the Habsburgs and the French, they didn't want a united Italy. That was just not in their playbook.
Well, let's take Verdi's Rigoletto, written in 1851 and premiered in Venice. What that's about is the desire of a man to kill the head of state. And had the music not been so extraordinary, La Donna Mobile and everything else, chances are it would have been entirely suppressed. But Verdi dealt with censors for his entire life, even after Italy became a republic.
And he did it boldly. He didn't wimp out and dance around it, but he just mobilized public sentiment and the truth and was quite a courageous character, it sounds like.
He's my hero. Wagner is fascinating, and I love studying Wagner, but Verdi is really, he's a man of such greatness, who also is a great composer.
Fred, I've been to the beautiful La Scaletta Museum at the Opera House in Milano, and there are, lots and lots of display cases about the great Italian opera composers, and I've learned about Verdi there. Where would you recommend to travel to get a sense and an appreciation of Verdi?
Verdi was born in what is now called the province of Parma, in a town called Roncole, which basically is his birth house and a church and a gas station. The gas station was not there in his time. The church is where the harmonium is that he went as a five-year-old and began to figure out chords. And you can go there and you can see that harmonium, but you can also see the humble little house where he was born. They were not rich.
What is a harmonium now for our...
Harmonium is sort of like a toy organ in a way.
Right.
And in addition, nearby is what's called Villa Sant'Agata, which was his farm. Verdi, we think of him as living in Milan. He actually lived on a farm, and he was a farmer, and he raised animals and crops, and he made prosciutto. He was, in fact, an excellent pork butcher, and when he had to persuade someone of something, he would send them pork with a letter and a handwritten recipe, and inevitably he got his way. So go there as well. The city of Parma adores Verdi. The Teatro Reggio is where a lot of the celebrations will be in October 2013, an entire month of Verdi operas. And, of course, Milan and La Scala. He died in Milan. He's buried in Milan in a building that he built, a retirement home for old musicians. Verdi was so good that he understood that his operas were only as good as the choruses, the orchestra members, and the small players who managed to perform in his operas, so he built a home for them to live in out for the rest of their years. That's greatness.
Fred Plotkin's helping us celebrate the bicentennials of opera giants Giuseppe Verdi and Richard Wagner today on Travel with Rick Steves. Fred is the author of Opera 101 and Italy for the Gourmet Traveler. We have a link to Fred's many opera blog entries in this week's program details on our website. And you'll find that in the radio section at ricksteves.com. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Steve's on the line in Albany, Oregon. Steve, thanks for your call.
Hi. My wife and I are big fans of yours. You know, you don't have to go to Europe to see great Wagner. There's a great cycle in not very far from you in Seattle. And I have a ticket to see that this August, which I'm really excited about.
I would imagine, Fred, there's lots of Wagner and Verdi sort of festivities and concerts and so on in Europe. Would the same be true in the United States?
Certainly is. The Metropolitan Opera is doing a Ring cycle, and they're doing three of them. And then, as the caller said, the Seattle Opera, which has one of the greatest Wagner traditions in America, is doing its last one under its great general manager, Spate Jenkins, who retires this year. It is a great destination for Wagner lovers, not only from the Pacific Northwest.
Do you think we're going to see more Wagner or more Verdi in the coming year in the United States because of these anniversaries?
Definitely more Verdi, because Wagner operas are longer, they're expensive to produce, and they have big, big casts, or I should say big, big choruses. Whereas Verdi operas, a lot of them are 2.5 to 3 hours, and everyone loves them. So I think that will bring them around more.
A little more popular, yeah. Also, we're all talking about Verdi and Wagner, but it's the 100th anniversary of the birth of Benjamin Britten.
Yes, Benjamin Britten is England's greatest opera composer. He was born in 1913, November 22nd, and we could divide his life between Great Britain and the United States. A lot of his formative time was spent in New York City in the 1930s and early 1940s. He lived in Brooklyn in a rather unusual household that had Gypsy Rose Lee, W.H. Auden, and many colorful people coming in and out of that household. Carson McCullers was another. And they were very bohemian. His boyfriend, who became his partner in life, Peter Pears, lived there too. He was a tenor. And Britten wrote operas for the voice of Peter Pears. And it's an interesting relationship in that basically all of the Britten operas have great tenor parts for a dramatic tenor, which is what Peter Pears was.
Well, that would make sense. Steve, in Oregon, are you a fan of Benjamin Britten also?
Yes, I am. And I was wondering, I mean, I don't think you can see those operas very easily in the U.S. I think you pretty much have to go to Great Britain, don't you?
Actually not. The L.A. Opera under James Conlon has been doing all of the Britten operas. Met will do A Midsummer Night's Dream next November. And on November 22nd at Carnegie Hall, the St. Louis Symphony will be doing Peter Grimes, probably his masterpiece, with Anthony Dean Griffey, an American tenor who is probably the Peter Pears of today. He's perfect for the music of Benjamin Britten.
Wow. Well, that would be great to see.
Steve, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Fred, you know, if Benjamin Britten was born 1 year later, he'd probably get a little more attention, but he's kind of overshadowed by the anniversaries of Wagner and Verdi.
By the two giants. But for people traveling to Great Britain, there's something called the Aldeburgh Festival, Aldeburgh. We might say Aldeburgh. And it's in East Anglia, and it's a very atmospheric place on the sea. And a lot of Britain's music evokes the sea, fishermen, seagulls, all of that. And when you go to Aldeburgh, you discover how place can influence a composer. Few composers of any kind, maybe just Bizet with Carmen, managed to so completely describe a place as did Benjamin Britten in Aldeburgh. So it's very special to go there and hear his music where he wrote it.
Just to finish off the anniversary discussions, next year, in 2014, is a big anniversary for Richard Strauss.
Another great German composer who spent a lot of time in Austria. The one thing to know about him, he founded the Salzburg Festival with a couple of colleagues, one of the greatest music festivals in the world. He wrote Der Rosenkavalier. He wrote Elektra, which to me is one of the greatest of all operas. He wrote Salome. The Vienna State Opera is coming to New York City to Carnegie Hall and will do Salome in March 1st, 2014. The Metropolitan Opera is doing three Strauss operas next year. All over the world, we're going to see Richard Strauss. Mm. He wrote gorgeous songs in addition to being an opera composer and fantastic symphonic music. You know the music from 2001, Thus Spake Zarathustra. That is Richard Strauss. He was really the master of the tone poem, which is a symphony that's very descriptive of place. He wrote one about Italy. He wrote one about the Alps. Fantastic.
So we can stay tuned for him, especially in 2014, when we have the 150th anniversary of his birth. And Fred, let's just wrap it up when we're thinking, planning our trips in the coming year, and we're music lovers. Just in a brief sort of survey, a review, where should we go and what should we know about so we can take full advantage of this festive year with the anniversaries of Verdi and Wagner?
Well, for Wagner, the time is May. He was born May 22nd. In Dresden, May 21st is a great gala at the opera house there, the Semperoper. On May 22nd, he was born in Leipzig, and all the celebrations will be there. Leipzig is doing all of his early operas that are seldom seen, and there'll be many exhibitions as well. So don't miss Leipzig. Bayreuth, where he's buried, is doing a big concert on May 22nd, and then has a festival in August of many of Wagner's operas. He also lived in Zurich, as I mentioned, and in Lucerne, and those cities are doing special festivals too. For Verdi, throughout the year, really, but especially in Parma, in the entire month of October, there will be different Verdi operas and concerts every night. La Scala is doing a production of Verdi's Don Carlo, my favorite Verdi opera, starting October 10th. Not much in the United States, I'm afraid to say.
Okay, and I got to mention those places you mentioned for Wagner, Leipzig, Dresden, Zurich, Lucerne, all beautiful cities in their own right, and especially interesting when you spice in your passion for Wagner's music.
Yes, indeed.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Fred Plotkin, the author of Opera 101. Cloudy in Durham, North Carolina, emailed us, and she said, Wagner is still controversial, especially since he was known to have been Hitler's favorite composer. Not only Jewish people are aware of this, therefore, why celebrate Richard Wagner?
Wagner, as I mentioned before, died 50 years before Hitler came to power. And the point here is that Wagner was one of the greatest creative artists. His works are about things much more universal than the fact that he was a horrid anti-Semite. If we were to eliminate all the creative artists of the 19th century in Europe who were anti-Semites, we're basically left with Verdi. Chopin was an anti-Semite. Mm-hmm. We tend not to think of him, maybe because Hitler didn't like Chopin. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, those were the times. And if we factor that in, we're missing out on what 19th century culture is, not politics and prejudice. Going all the way back to Monteverdi in 1607 and through Mozart and Handel, but especially Mozart, these guys reflected their times and pushed their times. Mm-hmm. Mozart wrote operas that basically helped foster the French Revolution and therefore the revolutions around Europe. We cannot ever celebrate great opera from politics and government. It's like the greatest novels are about much more than he loves her or he loves him or she loves her or she loves him. It doesn't matter. But these are big, complex stories. They're great canvases. And the music in opera is always about something. The music is a narrative. It's not the words that dominate an opera. It should always be the music.
Fred Plotkin, author of Opera 101, it is always a delight to talk with you about culture and travel and Europe, food and music. Thanks a lot, Fred.
Thank you, Rick.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick. Thanks to our friends at the Radio Foundation in New York City for their help today. There's more online at ricksteves.com. We'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. Tips about traveling in Europe and information about the EU are available at euintheus.org.